This is DH Radio on CJMQ 88.9 FM. I'm on the phone with Ryan Kamstrev, Tomboy Friend. Now, we were just discussing how, can we call it Tomboy Friend? It's the melding and growing and whatnot of music and bands and so on. It's such a catchy name. How the heck, first of all, did you come up with that?
Can't take credit for it. In fact, it was a Quebecer, a Montrealer, who came up with that name. My very good friend, Sherwin Tija. Do you know Sherwin?
I don't know Sherwin, but okay. I think I should.
He's a poet. He's a visual artist, and he's a general professional provoker. He's based out of Montreal right now. He does such things as the Strip Spelling Bee. I really, really recommend checking out the Strip.
Wow! Really.
We've been friends for years. He knew me as a solo act. I've been at that time when Tomboy Friend was coming together. This might have been attempt three for me to form a long lasting band. There's real problems with that in a transient city full of musicians with a lot of side projects.
Of
like
course.
And he came to me with this proposal that I sing with this one person who had been part of an earlier stage show I did, and that our band would be called Tomboy Friend. And I was, I was, as you are, suitably gripped by the name.
It's like you became a piece of art. Sherwin put you guys together.
Yeah, Sherwin has Warhol tendencies in him, and I think this was he wanted to play the role of Warhol in the Velvet Underground. Wanted a band.
You got to have a Warhol. Hey, look, a lot of bands out there are wishing for a Warhol at some point in
Absolutely.
The game. So to be
we're,
able to,
and I have to say, we're lucky enough to have several Warhols connected with our band.
Well, you can't have too many.
Yeah.
And I would think there's not an expression that's too many Warhols. There isn't.
Absolutely.
You know. So what now, musical influences, it's such a vast and varied thing for just about every person out there, particularly if you're in Generation X.
Sure.
And so what would you say for you guys is the drive to make music what's behind the music, or are you guys coming from somewhere with these influences in the past?
Yeah.
Pushing you?
My background is I'm a poet. I have two published volumes in circulation right now. I played music basically. I appreciated that of what I was doing, that if I could build up, music would be the most popular form in which I was doing what I was doing. My lyrics don't tend to be very abstruse. They yearn for a popular audience, but nevertheless, there's not a popular audience right now for the rarefied thing, which is Canadian poetry from small publishing houses at that. But, one of my overriding concerns as a writer has always been, there's a certain semantic embeddedness that culture partakes in, and 20 years ago there was so much hubbubaloo about the collapse of high culture and low culture, even dating back to the 60s. But even within that, the collapse, the leveling of it was still not as ambitious as I would have it be. The ridiculous amount of influences that Tomboy Friend sort of absorbs. I honestly do want to put Guns N' Roses and T.S. Eliot on an equal playing field. Not out of
course.
Some disrespect for T.S. Eliot, and not by some sort of grinning irony about Guns N' Roses. A huge poetic influence of mine is Walter Benjamin, who basically, I don't know if you're aware of him as a figure at all, but he was his heyday was in 1930s Germany as a Jewish communist. He did not live much longer than that.
Right.
But he was basically cataloging culture that basically any piece of art, any piece of kitsch, any stray quote from a newspaper. You could put all of these in social context,
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
they all have exact equal grounding. And this perspective, you know, continues to sort of overwhelm me that, like, I can get away with quoting Guns N' Roses insofar as I attach it to a very concrete reality.
Yes.
I would say my perspective is sort of solidly grounded in a socialist critique, a socialist democratic critique, I should add. So all of that sounds maybe a little overblown for a rock band.
No way.
Fair enough.
No way. No. You've just made me realize something very profound.
Which is?
Is that, you know what? I think sometimes your musical influences don't have to be music. And you're, because the thing is it becomes what influences you as an artist. Because I was just thinking, you know what? As a radio DJ, I am heavily influenced by Paisley.
There you go.
And I had no idea about that until this very moment. But what? It's like, why not? Why, like, it becomes, if you're going to express yourself artistically, then you, and you want to feel inspired, then you surround yourself with the things that make you feel that inspiration.
Absolutely.
So it can come down to, you know what? I love this color. I love this. Like, they talk about synesthesia.
Yep.
Where people hear a sound and taste something, or they see a color and they hear something, or that, you know, where there becomes this crossing over of the senses.
Right.
Well, I think when you express something as an artist, that's naturally kind of happening. So, you know, that little weird TV screen and movie theater in your head is a big mashup of all of these great things that drive you, that make you, that you know, kind of flip switches in your head. So why not?
And even to take, you know, the history of contemporary pop music, I mean, we are talking about a history that, like, and the type of pop music maybe that we take our trajectory from, which, you know, maybe in earnest starts in North America in the 50s, that's still not a ton of years. That's still, like, and we're talking, like, you know, an uncountable amount of acts and different bands and different formations and sounds. And but, you know, the way that people have talked about this has always been very limiting, that, like, you were in a punk band and therefore your influences were DOA, your influence was the Dead Kennedys. But you would always pick from this narrow sort of pool.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is an express attempt within this band to, like, open it up wide. You know, another thing that I'm, you know, there is a certain culture of indie music that, there's a certain self-satisfied elitism to it that we've closed the circle off and talk about each other, and that there is good music that we exist in, and we don't talk about the popular commercial music.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm from a small town in Ontario, so, like, if I'm going to be honest about, like, you know, the music I grew up with, you know, even saying something like the Pixies is rarefied and sort of dignified. Like, AC/DC was certainly large in my life. Cyndi Lauper was certainly large in my life. Unabashedly to revisit that has been hugely freeing to me as an artist. And the fact of the matter is, you know, if I'm not doing it ironically, I love these songs. Like, there's truly joy in this music for me.
I think what happens, too, to a certain extent, is we can't be snobs about it either, if we really want to give ourselves up to the art, because then the whole reason that we're behaving that way is because they made it, you know, like, it became commercial, of course, like, you know,
right.
it becomes this the whole radio songish kind of thing.
Right.
But at the same time, I think those are pretty earnest artists just the same, you know.
Sure,
like,
absolutely.
So,
I mean,
so
going,
it's
flashing back another 50 years, the whole industry of Tin Pan Alley, which, you know, was expressly, you know, in the largest sense, they were hacks. They were hacks that were talented musicians that were turning out jingles, you know, by the dozens each day in this little corridor in New York. Some of those tunes are amazing to me. They're absolutely amazing. Like, it's undoubtable that they're part of our cultural history, and it's you know, sort of indisputable that, like, the music that they were making, if you take it on exactly the level at which it was meant to be enjoyed, is enjoyable. It's aesthetic. You can't argue that.
No, exactly. You know what? Speaking of which, we better throw on some music so people can appreciate where this is coming from, how this conversation got to be going where it is. So without further ado, here is Tom Boyfriend on CJMQ 88.9 FM.
These, by the way, are some of the best questions I've ever been asked.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, thank you.
You know, people are lazy. I mean, perhaps they're just not that interested in us, frankly. But
I'm kind of, yeah, it's because I'm heavily influenced by Paisley. It's making it makes my brain go. I think if you actually dissected it, it would look like two big Paisleys stuck together. But yeah, maybe, or one side would be Paisley, and the other side would be something completely, like if there could be, what is the opposite of Paisley?
Yeah, I don't know. But reticent cool, I know what you mean.
I'm going to have to think about that for a while.
Yeah.
You're listening to CJMQ 88.9 FM. I'm on the phone with Ryan Kempstra. You just got to hear Tom Boyfriend. Now you know what I'm talking about. Now you know why I have been raving and why you guys need to hear this. It's because it is so colorful and so such rich music with layer upon layer of goodness. So tell me about the band. Who are you playing with, Ryan?
Okay. Well, we have had long ago when I set this up, I mentioned that, you know, there are real technical problems to setting up a long-standing band in a transient community full of people with a lot of projects. So beyond the initial suggestion of my friend Sherwin, you know, I sat about planning in advance how I can make a workable entity. I had to be honest to myself that the only thing that interests me about the music is the songwriting and the lyrics, that if that was not my major role within the band, it would not be interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I immediately began to approach people to whom, you know, music was something that they did, but it was not a central part of their existence. They weren't existing at that part, like, you know, their life was not absorbed in the music scene. If anything, it was like, you know, renegades from bands, you know, crafters, visual artists. I also sort of speculated in advance that Toronto being what it is, that there would be turnover. And there has been turnover. Most of it fairly amiable. Sometimes just the sort of turnover that comes with a large project where, you know, people do have to treat it like a job, or else it kind of peters away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, I mean, it's a strange sort of band in the fact that, like, right now we have two bassists. Our original bassist, you know, she's a doctorate student in biochemistry, a new mother as well. You know, there was she continued to do so much gigging, but, you know, there's a real part that there's a relief that we can still do shows just as often, but she doesn't necessarily have to live the life of rock and roll.
Yes.
I don't think any of us, we're pretty solidly in our 30s, I don't think any of us right now are really up for living the life of rock and roll in the conventional way. We have, you know, two lead singers, myself and Marlena Zuber.
Mm-hmm.
Pianist Sholem Kristolka, who is mainly known around Toronto as being an art critic. His zine, The Art Fag, it's no longer in existence, but it was a brilliant little thing. An art critic and a painter. We have a whole entity of backup singers called the Glory Hogs. There's four of them. So, you know, our numbers can stretch anywhere from 10 to 11 on stage.
Wow.
to a basic working unit that's still quite large of five or six people.
It still does provide that layering, you know, no matter what. So it's kind of... Okay.
And, I mean, I think, you know, over the years, what I've seen, what makes this group cohere is that there's a huge love of performance for the people that's stick around. Our stage shows tend to be very elaborate. They tend to be very high energy. They tend to be very communal, as you can imagine, with that many people on stage. There tends to be a lot of dress up and indie craft sets involved with it. It's the people that really enjoy that full experience that, we've existed now for, I guess, 3.5 years. Definitely for the people that have stuck 3.5 years, I mean, that's the part of it they love. I think the making of the music just as much, but there's ways in which we're almost more of a performance art troupe than a band.
It's funny because my next question was good, or my next comment in reference to how it sounds, how your performances sound, is just that of a performance.
Right.
You know, so it's which to me isn't always the right term for a musical concert. You know,
right.
Like yes, the person is performing, but if it's really I don't know, cross media.
Yeah.
Related, then yeah, you're getting more from
yeah,
it.
And I mean, there was a very self-conscious reaction, especially when I put together Tom Boyfriend, to what seemed to be the default indie show that with no disrespect to shoegazer music, I think sometimes that what that aesthetic did to performance sort of galls me.
Yes.
The sort of remote and aloof, maybe even, shall I say, time's precious stage presence. I can't deny in my mind that I feel that this is entertainment. That no one is so precious or deserving or worthy to be on stage and be admired without working a bit for it.
Yes.
I'm perfectly happy to admit that is a bias, and there's another world to whom should speak to the other side of what I just said.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, every time I walk on stage, I do walk on stage with the feeling that, like, you know, there's a level that I have to win their love, basically. I like that, you know, there is, you know, undoubtedly when we play shows, there is a small following that will come in that knows the songs in advance. Our friends are friends of a friend and so on. But I love the fact that, like, you know, playing at this old-timers bar that's recently been turned into, like, a boutique hotel, but still the old-timers are there from when it was a dive. And I love the fact that, like, one of the old-timers pulled me aside after the show and just loved us. And he loved us because he recognized it as entertainment. It was something he could speak to, basically.
Well, I think if an audience realizes that you are making an effort to connect with them, it makes a big difference. I have a really hard time with going to shows when there are these giant, almost like barricades around the band, and there's a small city of people who are there. Like, it's still really fun.
Yeah.
For example, I saw Muse a couple of weeks ago. I was very happy to feel like I was in a planet.
Right.
And it really did feel that way, and it was remarkable, but it's not the same at all as being a part of something that has an intimacy.
Sure.
To it as well, and that has, and where the individuals on stage too are not just showing up.
Yep.
That's extremely. I think as a concert goer and as a music lover, that wins you love, right?
Yeah.
There.
And I honestly do have to say, I mean, I do feel that there's political ramifications to that. That as many barriers are inserted between a band and an audience, suggest a certain relationship to how the performers feel in a relation of privilege to their audience.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole bunch of caveats and asides to that statement that I know need to be made, but nevertheless, I feel that very strongly. I do recognize that a band with a level of recognition of that they have screaming, adoring fans that want to jump on the stage and so on and so on, that, you know, that basically becomes a security issue.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, I mean, people do, you know, their aesthetic often, when they turn away from the stage and there's a bunch of barriers inserted between the audience and themselves, it says a certain something about where we place the artist.
But it's also who we think we are as an audience too, because
right.
The thing is why should we ever feel like when we go somewhere and somebody is putting a piece of their soul out there and performing their music for us, that we have any right to go and jump on them?
Sure.
You know, like, sure. So there's part of that too, that I think that the fences are there because somehow there's some kind of advantage that's taken by the audience. So they have to be held in, like, you know, it's sort of, it's, so it's very bizarre.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely bizarre. I mean, you know, I'm always a slightly hesitant and suspicious to hero worship, but I realize it's a two-sided argument. Like, it's not just that there are performers out there that who think they're all that. They're also built into that by manic adoration, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Music occupies a very strange, privileged place in our culture. I'm not knocking it, but, like, you know, there are other interesting mediums out there. People's devotion and the sense of ownership they feel over a performance can be quite startling.
It's very strange. Like, yep. I think, and yet there's this weird thing that I get. Like, I'm one of those music lovers that when I am hooked on a song, and there are many, many, many that mm-hmm. I am hooked on, when I listen to a song that I'm hooked on, I am just somehow just considerable percentage more alive than I was pre-song, and when the song is at its height of interest for me, like, that energy is just unstoppable. And if
sure.
I already feel a little bit out of control. I'm listening to it. I'm piercing my eardrums.
Right.
I'm rocketing down the road while I'm doing so. Or if you're on a dance floor, God forbid, like, look out, you know. But and then so then you imagine if that many people where that energy is multiplied, then I think it gets out of everybody's control. it's magical and incredible, and yet at the same time, everybody's just got to simmer down now, you know, like,
yeah.
Just kind of.
Well, and there's this relationship. I was having dinner with someone, and someone described, I think he was even talking about one of the Tom Boyfriend songs, and he was saying how it had become part of his personal soundtrack, and he said this in a way that, you know, was meant that everyone would immediately recognize what he meant, and I didn't know what he meant. I don't have an iPod. I've never had an iPod. But it's literally that we have this sort of, like, circulation of songs that accompany us for a certain amount of time through our lives. And so, you know, very much so, I suspect, especially with a song like The End of Poverty, you know, this was the theme song to someone's life for six or seven months. It was the opening credits for the turmoils that they were going through. And at that level, they feel a certain amount of personal and intimate ownership over these things, which is kind of brilliant for me as a producer. And I get sometimes sort of limiting too, but, like, mostly kind of brilliant. I mean, I wish people still had those relationships to their favorite poems, but it's their favorite songs that occupy that now.
It is. It's funny. Eh? I think it is. There are still people out there. So many people who will be affected and impacted by poetry, and I don't know how to make it catch on more than in the lyric form the way that it is right now, or the sound form. It's like
sure.
It's a music sort of. Not
but the really, lyrics always been attached to music.
Like, oh,
that's,
yeah,
that's been there since the beginning.
And so I just had a kind of a realization while you were speaking. Man, I'm just, my brain is growing as we speak, Ryan. It's amazing. By the way, just in case you're tuning in and wondering who the heck is Sheila Q talking to, Ryan Kamstra of Tom Boyfriend. As an artist and a performer and writing music and putting it out there and performing it, there's this thing that I was just thinking when you were saying that you didn't get what it was exactly that what the listener's experience was in that respect. When it's your own soundtrack,
mm-hmm.
like your own soundtrack, you get the things that make it that, but as the person who's putting the music out, I don't think you can get what it's going to do for your listener. And I hadn't thought about it that way. Like, for myself, why I would incorporate Tom Boyfriend into my soundtrack and how it makes, how it becomes a part of, you know what, this is right. And this has to do with how I feel right now.
For sure.
Like, I don't think you, as the songwriter, as the performer, I don't think you can experience it the same way. And I had not thought about it that way, because it becomes a completely different, you own it because you made it. And then we own it because we identified in a way that that can't really completely be shared.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I haven't written the song. I have a pretty clear idea what I think it's about.
Yeah.
That it has, it's existed as this weird sleeper hit, and I still, you know, it shows up in all these weird places, all these weird media mentions, and this is all because of the boon of new media, the fact that we put these things online and just see what became of them. You know, really, I'm always sort of bowled over by how personal the mentions are sometimes. Like, it's love that people are expressing, and it actually, it does kind of surprise me. Like, it's you know, clearly to do this, you have a certain opinion of yourself, and you think you're good at what you're doing, but at the same time, it's you know, I honestly don't know what chord it's hitting in people sometimes, because I think the basic thesis of that song is fairly harsh.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But, yeah, no.
But sometimes harsh is sort of what you need, though, isn't it?
What's that?
Sometimes harsh is sort of what you need. Like,
fair.
Sometimes it's kind of, you kind of like, bring on the, no cloudy, pretty unicorns today. You know?
Yeah.
No. Like,
well, and on the surface, it's a very happy song. There's lots of hand clapping in it.
See, so as long as there's that, they're like, I feel happy and angry at the world.
Exactly.
And
it's the
happiest,
angriest song that has appeared in some time.
It's a yin and yang, baby. Okay, you know what? We got to play more music. We just have to. All right, here comes Tom Boyfriend on CJMQ. Tom Boyfriend on CJMQ 88.9 FM. You're listening to DH Radio. My name is Sheila Q, and this has like so fun, Ryan Kamstra.
I'm having a good time, too.
All right, well, we are about to make our way into the final four, because I know that the DH Radio listeners out there are just waiting, and they're like, she can't forget. She better remember. She's got to ask Ryan, and they're going to want to know. So, Ryan Kamstra of Tom Boyfriend, what would you say would be your greatest strength, or among your greatest strengths?
Jeez. Well, in regards to this particular thing, Tom Boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
My band's going to listen to this and
they're just going to laugh. It's okay.
Yeah, they're going to laugh. But honestly, with some glaring exceptions, I think just the curatorial part that went into getting people together to do this, because it might not have been a natural trajectory for any of these people to end up in a band. The music they're making together is kind of amazing, and I'm kind of beside myself about that.
Well, and you used the word curatorial.
Yep.
And that is such a, like, I just had this complete visual of what that means, like it's not just bringing people together, and it's not just leaving it up to fate. There is something that's very organic and planted and scientific and right about that.
Yeah, but our criteria has never been that, like, oh, you are the best ukulele player ever, and I say ukulele because we don't have a ukuleleist, and if I said a real instrument, someone in my band would probably get mad at me.
But, ukulele.
But and it's not that anybody is lacking in skill, but it's like there's something else. It's something like a combination of spirit, a combination of aesthetic sense, a combination of performance.
Well, that has a sound and a feeling, too.
Yeah.
So,
but, you know, just technical wankers need not apply.
I love it. Okay. What would you say would be your greatest weakness?
Geez, this is a freaking job interview.
Draw me a picture.
That I work
teamwork.
Too hard.
Oh, that you work too hard? Okay, go on.
No, that was a job interview. So.
How do you feel about overtime, Ryan?
I'm over, you know, I guess, you know, partially within this experience too, I've been like songwriter, band administrator, publicist, manager. I have a ridiculous amount of roles. I'm way minutely over aware all of my failings within that, but a lot of the failings simply were because, like, I never imagined though I expressly went out to take this on, I never imagined what was actually involved in it. And we've basically been learning on our feet as it goes. You know, everywhere down to the fact that, like, you know, major media mentions were being made of us, and we found out about it weeks later. Like, all of this was a surprise. So, you know, again, in terms of this particular project, maybe my unpreparedness would be my weakness often.
I'm not ready. I'm still putting on my pants.
About, I didn't think about the ramifications of this. I mean, I was working as a solo performer for about 8 years before this started, and a solo performer that, frankly, that, you know, there'd be three media mentions of me in small papers a year. Like, it was not much to take care of, really.
Until it began to grow. Here you go.
Yeah.
So what would you say is your favorite candy?
Right. So, while not being diabetic, I have those tendencies. It's in my family. I don't have much of a sweet tooth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a real sucker for the ginger candy, though. That's the only candy I can think of that I just love.
Have you got any, are there any candy weaknesses in your band?
Yes. Yeah, there are. You'd have to talk to each of them individually, but I know the sweet tooth. I mean, there's been numerous concerts at which sweets have been presented to the audience by the band.
Oh, that's even better. Yes. Wait a second. Okay, wait. You guys are this multi-layered, band of destiny that performs, wears costumes, and hands out candy.
Yeah, like we're a cross between like an NGO, a performance art troupe, a band,
and Mr.
and
Dress
frankly,
Up.
Sometimes a cooking club.
Oh,
a little bit of dress up. Yeah, it's a weird experience.
I love it, and that's why I absolutely have to have to experience it. I have to see you guys. So, what would you like to be remembered for? Now that we've covered everything that you should be remembered
for. What would I like to be remembered for? Jesus. And again, I'm going to just limit it to this project right now, but I really want to do this right. I want to make a concerted attempt to do this right. I think there's something really exciting right now with the general collapse of the music industry, you know, the buzzing and pulsing of what's possible within indie culture, especially that... the internet has opened things wide, wide, wide. I have been, you know, witness to a number of projects that have started out in this vein and collapsed under the most predictable things, which is basically the success kills a lot of these things, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it doesn't have to. I mean, I think what happens in a lot of cases is people are young. They don't have much business experience, and the lure of being a superstar or being the one to be a superstar in a very large group wins out unrealistically over more practical concerns, which is basically, you know, to have good working relations with one another.
Mm-hmm.
I would really like to see this project done right. I would like Tom Boyfriend to be remembered for, like, the band that did not collapse under its own acrimony.
Oh, you know what? That is... That's such a, like, as much as
it's
somebody
a
can say,
goal,
ooh,
I know.
But you know what, but it's not like it's some kind of pallbearer. It's because there's, what you're talking about is strength.
Yep.
So that's beautiful.
And it's a genuinely a good time for us. And like, I hope that we're wise enough people that, we recognize it for what it is. Like there's no big moment to be had in this. It's just the ongoing creation of it. And I really do hope that we can be remembered for doing it right.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you're completely and totally well on your way. Thank you so much, Ryan Kamstra of Tom Boyfriend. And you're going to be hearing more of Tom Boyfriend on CJMQ for sure. All right. It's been a blast. Thank you so much.
Thank you.